Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive number one, number two employee. Leave a message at the...
Hi, Jamie. It's you, Jamie. Don't be alarmed, but I think there's a guy following you. Maybe we should get that guard dog we talked about? Nothing too scary. Maybe like a Bichon with an attitude? You know, Progressive's collision insurance covers injured dogs and cats at no extra cost, so... Wait, the guy stood up when I stood up. He's on the phone. He's looking right at me. Oh, wait, it's just my reflection. Don't tell anyone about this.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Pet coverage not available in New Hampshire and North Carolina.
You are Locked On Lakers, your daily podcast on the Los Angeles Lakers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I am joined by Harrison Fagan. In a few minutes, we're going to be joined by Mark Medina, and Harrison's going to be there. Harrison, on a scale of
I'm not believing you until it actually happens.
On a scale of one to Magic Johnson, how excited are you to finally be on a show with Mark Medina?
I told you, I'm not putting the cart before the horse. I want to figure out that I'm actually going to be on it.
All right, that's fair. That's fair. But I.
Because you've done this to me before. Literally every single time we've had him on.
That's fair. I can't even. That's not fake news. All right. So the way this is going to work out, we're going to talk really briefly about the Lakers roster being pretty much solidified at this point. There might be the occasional training camp invite, but we're going to talk really quickly about what the roster looks like. And then we're going to throw straight into the Medina interview. He was really. Giving with his time, so in a great conversation, a lot of fun. We actually got to laugh. We poked fun at both Harrison and myself, which is always fun. But as always, find the show on Audio Boom, iTunes, Silver Screen and Roll, TuneIn, Stitcher, and today's Fast Break. Today's show is brought to you by SeatGeek. Make sure you're using the promo code LONBA to get $20 back from your first purchase using the application. SeatGeek's the fastest and easiest way to buy tickets online. All right, so the Lakers roster as it stands right now. They technically have 15 guys, though Vanderbilt is more of like a training camp invite with 50.
His is like a glorified training camp invite because it's the maximum 50K guarantee that they can give him and still have him go back to the G League.
Which is weird that I saw people angry about that on my timeline. But
it's Twitter, man. People just like I've Twitter's mission statement should just be like people are angry.
Whereas like Facebook is like the everything is fine.
Yeah. Like Facebook is like you're like faking the life that you want to have, and Instagram is like a similar vibe, and then Twitter is just like, let's all complain.
And then MySpace is the skeleton sitting at its desktop.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, so that was our take on social media. But the Lakers, they officially signed Thomas Bryant, friend of the show, we're allowed to say that. And they have all of the other 13 or 14 guys that they have previously had. Alex Caruso is their one two-way contract that they signed so far. They have left themselves open to being able to offer that to somebody else. I would probably go out on a limb and say that maybe goes to Vander Blue. If nothing else, it's more money that he would make in the D-League. And it's kind of a make-good kind of thing. On given the amount of time and work he's put into, you know, making his dream to be a Laker come true. So as it stands right now, the Lakers aren't going to come close to the playoffs because of how tough this Western Conference is, but it's a respectable roster, and that's something that we haven't been able to say in 5 years.
Well, except for the times that we said this is going to be the year that it's a respectable roster and they're fun to watch the last 2 years, and then they haven't been, but, you know.
Where would you say, so given this is the roster that the Lakers are looking at.
I feel like it's Groundhog Day, man.
given the Lakers' tendency and proclivity to do weird stuff. Like, literally, before the show, Harrison was, like, in the fetal position saying how scared he is for breaking news at any time.
I was saying, I want to get this podcast out because it's been quiet and something is going to break.
But if nothing else breaks, would you say that, like, if nothing else breaks, and this is the roster that the Lakers go into with next season, would you say that this roster is capable of making enough headlines? Because that's really the goal this year, right? Like, individual wins or win totals doesn't mean nearly as much as catching Paul George's eye, as catching LeBron James's eye. Do you think this roster...
Are you saying the Lakers roster is clickbait?
I mean, yeah. I would say, yeah.
All right, this is my team all of a sudden.
They are the team for the millennials. So if the point of this season is to catch a superstar's eye, do you think this team is capable of doing something like that? Because I think they are, because I think they're a fun team.
I think it's less the roster and it's more Lonzo Ball, and I don't want to put too many expectations on him as a rookie, but at the same time, just watching how they played at Summer League, the stats been well cited. I saw Jacob Rude was the first one that I saw throw it out there, but they had more passes during their Summer League games that were 40 minutes than they had in their regular season games last year. Like, the ball movement is just, it's crazy, it's transcendent, and it's different, and it's overwhelming. And if it's anything like that in the regular season, maybe it won't be quite, the transformation won't be quite as stark, but if it's anything like that, that looks like it's fun to play in. And I think that's the best argument that the Lakers can make to these guys right now, is this is going to make you look better, it's going to be fun to play in, and we're going to win because we're going to have players of your talent.
Yeah, I would completely agree. And look, before people yell and scream and say, wait, at what point do we actually care about wins in the actual season? You care about wins in the actual season when you have good NBA players that are signed up long term, right? Like,
there's no reason to not care about wins this year. Like, you can root for the team to win now. There's no incentive to tank, so feel free.
Right, but what I'm saying is the difference here is in terms of what means more for the organization moving forward, it's how well they can catch LeBron's eye. And it's not even close. Like, anybody who's saying, well, will they win 33 or 35 wins? Like, that doesn't matter. What matters is that, you know, Paul George is looking over his shoulder while he is watching Russell Westbrook shoot his 53rd pull-up jumper late in the fourth quarter. And he's saying, hey, you know what? It'd be nice to play with a point guard who passes. Like, that'd be fun. And LeBron James is sitting there while Kyrie Irving is either requesting a trade or trying to convince him that the earth is flat. He's saying, you know, it'd be nice to play with a point guard who understands just basic physics, you know, and so I think that those are the things.
Well, passing, and like, we do need to get somebody to ask Lonzo Ball if he thinks the earth is spherical or flat, just to make sure that that's out there for LeBron. Like, hey, this guy's not crazy.
It would be bad for the big baller brand, because the ball is a sphere, so he needs to roll with the
– Yeah, flat baller brand is a lot less catchy.
Way less catchy. So, all right, that was our brief intro here. We're going to throw it to the – Mark Medina conversation. It was a really fun one.
Our most frequent recurring media guest now.
Yeah, friend of the, we call Thomas Bryan a friend of the show. I'd say Mark Medina, you're
well, we were just trying to trick him into being a friend of the show. Like, Mark, I think, is like actually already a friend of the show now.
Yeah, he has no choice. He can't defend himself here. Before we get to that, though, let's really quickly talk about SeatGeek. They have been tremendous to us, so let's continue to be tremendous for them. Use that promo code LONBA to get $20 back off of your first purchase using the application. You have the Dodgers are on a record pace this year. If you haven't gone to catch these Dodgers, one, you better change that. Two, stay for the whole thing. And three, actually, no. I'm going to – one, use SeatGeek. Two, change it by using SeatGeek. Three, stay for the whole game because they're incredible. So use SeatGeek, LONBA, they have the deal score, which is going to tell you exactly how good a value you're getting as soon as you make that purchase or before you even make that purchase. That's a great thing. And then Harrison, go ahead and talk about your favorite, which is your favorite part of the app, which is Go.
Well, my favorite part is the price alerts, where it'll let you know when it's at your price, which is something that you should be turning on because you've promised to take me to a Dodgers game, and you're all talk and no action for the second summer in a row. Haven't done it. So, I mean, but if you decide to change your mind, you can use the promo code LONBA and get $20 back on your first purchase, which you can use to finally buy me, like, I don't know, one of these coffees or something that you owe me from the last two Vegas trips, where I've successfully won Twitter-related bets with you, and you just never pay up.
All right, well, it looks like I'm taking Harrison to a Dodger game.
Anyway, use the promo code LONBA, get $20 back on your first SeatGeek purchase. It's an amazing app. It's an amazing way to buy tickets. It'll save you money. We're just trying to help you guys out. So use that promo code and just get it. It's free money. Take the free money.
All right, fine. I'll buy you Dodgers tickets. I'm way more excited, though, for this conversation we have with Mark. It's a really productive one. We start with the Lakers offseason as a whole. We talk about Lonzo Ball and the process that led to the Lakers drafting him. We talk about LeBron. We talked about he had a really good segment about D'Angelo Russell. It was a really good, fun conversation, plenty of laughter as well in there. So,
yeah, I'm not one for self-promotion, but I'm willing to bet that it's going to be the most reporting and insight that you get on the Lakers today.
That's a good bet. See, this is why you win free coffee,
because
you
just there's not that much going on right now, so you can listen to this and learn a lot about the Lakers offseason and kind of some inside thinking into what went into everything that was going on this summer.
Yep. All right. Thinking is something you don't rarely get from this podcast, so enjoy that change. All right, we are joined now by Mark Medina of the SoCal News Group, friend of the show. Mark, you're here, and Harrison is also here. So this is kind of a momentous occasion.
I know, and this means you can't throw him under the bus when you bring me on board either, right?
Yeah, usually how this goes is we go, all right, we're going to go to the interview with Mark now, and then all of a sudden it's just Anthony.
Weird how that happens.
Harrison, I'm here. I'm glad you're here to defend yourself and obviously provide insight on the Lakers.
Well, no, I've listened back to the old podcast, and I appreciate you not just letting him slander me. Like, he tries it every single time, and you always tell him, no, I'm not trying to duck Harrison. I haven't banned him from – I haven't said I won't come on when he's on here. No matter what Anthony tries to imply, you've defended me, so I appreciate that.
The agreement that it was just going to be Harrison and I this episode, right? Like, what's going on?
Well, you know.
Yeah, well, sorry about that. He saw my schedule and just kind of crashed it. So that's my bad.
Okay. Well, yeah. Next time.
Yeah. It was actually because that I would have been fine with that, but Harrison freaked out a little bit. He got a little nervous about the power of talking to Mark Medina. So I was like, all right, Harrison, let me walk you through this. So this is as I said at the beginning. This is Mark Medina. He's been on the show a few times now. We are thoroughly into the Lakers offseason. They have their roster pretty much set with, you know, excluding some roster camp or the training camp invites and how that all might shake out. But for as it stands right now, the Lakers are done making moves for the offseason. So that's where we'll start. Mark, from compared to, say, the last 5 years or so, this has to be the most successful offseason by a long shot, right?
Yeah, I mean, you're obviously grading on a curve because, you know, the last few seasons, it was a big fat F, right, with striking out on free agents and then last year, overspending on the Mozgov and Deng contracts. I think all things considered for where the Lakers are at this point and what they're trying to accomplish, you give them an A. I mean, obviously, it's not like they made any huge splash free agent signings. They did miss out on some guys, you know, that they're thinking of adding, you know, for their point guard spot with, you know, George Hill and Deion Waiters and Derrick Rose. But I think within the parameters of what they're looking for of A, not overspending on multi-year deals, keeping it within that 1-year deal structure, and just knowing where the Lakers are at this rebuilding stage, where, you know, they're in a position of, you know, relative weakness than compared to other teams that are playoff contenders. I think it's been a successful offseason, both with the draft and what they've done in free agency.
How serious were the Derrick Rose things? Because, like, for Harrison and I, we had a minor freakout podcast. Actually, it wasn't even a minor one. It was an actual freakout podcast for the both of us. And for us, it just didn't make any sense either on or off the court. So, but how serious were they? Did they legitimately want Derrick Rose? Because the fit didn't seem right.
Well, it was very serious, but it was in the sense of this – it was going to be under a specific framework. Again, it was going to be under a one-year deal. They're envisioning Derrick Rose, obviously, coming off the bench. It's not like he was going to be taking Lonzo Ball's starting position. And I think, you know, obviously, even if Cleveland's a hot mess right now with the Kyrie Irving situation, compared to where the Lakers are at, you know, Derrick Rose has a better opportunity to play more minutes. He's on a better team. So, you know, the Lakers were definitely open to that idea. And they're optimistic that he could be healthy. I don't think that they're expecting him to be the Derrick Rose of his prime. But, you know, given where the Lakers are at with wanting to add some good veterans on the team that could complement their young guys, it was definitely a serious conversation. But it's not like they're pulling their hair out that they missed out on Derrick Rose. Again, the number one objective was to be beholden to those one-year deals just so they have all that money for next season to try to make a run at LeBron, Paul George, Russell Westbrook, basically every top guy down the line.
Do you get the sense that they were concerned at all about the Derrick Rose character stuff? Was that something that they were debating internally when they were talking about potentially signing him?
Sure. To what level of concern, not clear, but the sense that I've gotten, not just with Derrick Rose, but with every deal, they've been very deliberative in, you know, talking to basically everyone that would know that certain player. And that's probably typical for most front offices, but just the sense that I got when I was speaking with different agents and, you know, different people around the league is that they're really doing their homework and, you know, not in doing background checks and talking to different people in different walks of life that would know a certain player, you know, whether it's former teammates, former coaches. So for sure, they were canvassing every single nook and cranny about all these guys.
The background check stuff sounds to me like you said, most front offices should and would probably do that. But do you think that, I mean, just the fact that you're bringing it up, that you felt like you wanted to mention that they were doing that, is that different? Are they doing more of it than the past front office? Is that maybe where we're seeing some of the difference between Pelinka as a former agent and all this stuff that we've talked about, that he knows how to back channel a little bit more, or he's more willing to, and those types of things? Is that where we're seeing that difference maybe?
It's hard to say. I think for the Lakers right now, like, there were two specific examples, you know, the Derrick Rose situation, but also when they were talking about Rajon Rondo, like, you know, on one hand, that's a great idea because he's an established veteran. He's a pretty good point guard. But he has a lot of question marks of how good of a mentor was he. You know, he's had clashes with different coaches, not to mention the fact that he's kind of on the tail end of his career from a production standpoint. So I think specifically with who they're looking at, that kind of came into play. Most definitely with the Rondo stuff. I mean, they were getting really, you know, different sentiments of, you know, him being a good mentor on certain teams, and then, you know, to what degree was he a problem with different coaches, and they're just trying to get that complete picture. And I know, you know, there was definitely some back and forth and question marks within the organization of, is this really a good move? So, you know, obviously Rondo had a say in it as well, because he wound up going to New Orleans. You know, he was going to have a bigger role there. You know, they're more equipped to kind of make a run, at least from the playoff standpoint, than the Lakers. But, you know, I think, you know, how the Lakers moved at their pace that they did, where it was very slow and deliberative, I can't think kind of illustrated, you know, why they're, you know, kind of making sure they're crossing their T's, dotting their I's, and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, the reason we're harping so much on this is because part of the D'Angelo Russell trade, and audience, go ahead, roll your eyes. Anthony brought up the D'Angelo.
Drink. Anthony mentioned D'Angelo Russell.
Yeah, it took 8 minutes. It took 8 minutes to bring up D'Angelo Russell. But the reason we're bringing that up is because part of the reason why they made that trade was, one, obviously to get rid of the Timofey Mozgov contract, because without doing that, they have zero shot of luring a Paul George or a LeBron James next year. But there was also some attacking of Russell's character that kind of went on. And from where I was sitting, it felt kind of weird that, you know, you would go after D'Angelo Russell's character and then go after somebody who has the off-court issues that Derrick Rose has and who has clashed publicly with coaches the way Rajon Rondo has. That kind of juxtaposition didn't sit well with me. Is that analysis far off, or is it just you have to look at the two situations in the different context that they were in?
Well, I think with Rondo and Rose, it's under the context of, you know, every different player has a different story and they're trying to separate fact from fiction. The D'Angelo stuff, since you brought it up, Anthony, like, I'm going to go deep in on this.
Cool.
Let's do it.
Because you know, it's not my position to really have like a take, like, was this good or bad, or D'Angelo, like, I don't think the things are mutually exclusive. Like, D'Angelo showed a lot of signs of, hey, he can be a good player. He could very well build off of this. I mean, the Nets got what they wanted. But the main objective with the Brooklyn trade, and you, I'm sure you probably know this, it was obviously the salary dump with Mozgov. They got a good center in Brook Lopez. They got the draft pick. And I think the idea of, you know, why the rush of doing this, they technically had time, but when you talk to people around the league of, are the Lakers going to be able to pull this off, most of people laughed about it. They kind of chuckled and was like, yeah, good luck trying to find a team. So it wasn't a matter of like, what's the rush? Why are they doing it? You never know when the stars are going to perfectly align where, you know, Brooklyn had a good center to offer in return, and they're able to get a draft pick. And obviously, they had to make D'Angelo a casualty in this to make it work, and that kind of cut both ways, where if they had offered another young player outside of, you know, number two pick and Brandon Ingram, which, you know, they didn't want to do, I don't know if they would have been able to pull that move off. But at the same time, the willingness for them to make D'Angelo part of that deal, I think, illustrates a few things. There's a healthy debate, you know, how well did Byron relate to him and use him and that sort of thing. But I think there has to be something to be said that both members of Byron's staff and Luke Walton's staff, you would hear more criticisms about D'Angelo than praise, especially toward the end of the season. And you can't discount the fact that, you know, he's posted numbers that guys at his age and his second year in the NBA didn't do, and they're certainly not dismissive of that, but that's not the complete story. They're also evaluating how does he play with his teammates? What kind of trust level does he have with them? What kind of leader does he have with them? And I think under that, you know, when Magic's being asked about it and he's saying, hey, I want to be a leader, like, I don't think that's really a character assassination. Like, Magic told D'Angelo and Rob told D'Angelo in his exit meeting exactly that. You need to improve on your leadership. So, like, the comment didn't come out of left field. And it's certainly nothing new that wasn't said before, you know, under Byron's staff. And, you know, the Byron criticism, obviously, some people take differently because of how well Byron was as a coach and how well he related to the team in general. But, like, the criticisms about D'Angelo, about his consistency and overall attitude and that sort of thing, like, it carried through both coaching staffs. And that sentiment didn't really change and perhaps even worsened as his second season went on. So I think when you take all that into consideration, there's more of an understanding of why they did that. And it certainly, the move could certainly come back to bite him. Like, D'Angelo might be a good player, but he didn't show enough at this point with all those qualities to make them convince, hey, we're comfortable of him being the face of the franchise and the leader of the team. I think they're comfortable enough of him being a piece as part of a young team, but nothing more than that.
Yeah, I've come around to it from the sense of, look, we saw how good Lonzo Ball was in Summer League, and we'll talk about Lonzo here in a second, but given how good Lonzo is and given the potential star power that he's shown that, frankly, none of the other draft picks showed in any of their first times through Summer League, you at this point, you kind of have to build around him. You have to do whatever you possibly can to make sure that he's successful. And if there's any doubt whatsoever about, you know, whether he and D'Angelo Russell mesh in terms of basketball on the court personalities and how D'Angelo Russell might handle the Lonzo hype, if there's any question about that, then you make that move. You kind of have to open things up for Lonzo. And look, I'm probably one of the hardest people on that trade, but from that perspective, I think that's where it makes sense. And then if you can also get rid of the Timofey Mozgov deal and land a Brook Lopez and get a draft pick, then that's about as good as you could have hoped for, you know, for all things considered. And then the other thing too that could have very well happened is if Lonzo and D'Angelo Russell don't mesh, then you lose the leverage, you lose the trade value that D'Angelo Russell might have, and then there went the Brook Lopez trade. So,
and also cap space around the league dried up. I think that's almost the best argument for it that of any of them, is that Brooklyn, apparently, just judging by their moves and judging by the moves they were rumored in, was very willing to take salary dumps in exchange for assets. And so I think if they hadn't made that Russell trade when they did, is that move still there? I think originally that was kind of our argument, but I don't know that it is. Maybe they do move Brook Lopez for somebody else and take on like another bad contract and an asset or something like that, because we've seen them do it already this offseason.
Right, and that goes back, Harrison, that goes back to kind of the point at the beginning of, you know, there's not necessarily a deadline of them when or how can they get rid of either Mozgov or Dane contracts, but because of how large of a number of it is and how unattractive it is to many teams, you just never know the timing of, hey, when's the next opportunity this is going to come. So that's really where it came down to. And, you know, the thing that's interesting about the Lonzo component, Anthony, I mean, that's certainly a variable, but what's interesting is I didn't get a true sense. I think there's probably some mixed feelings of, you know, how Lonzo and D'Angelo would play. Like, I think that there was some openness of having that work because they were having D'Angelo play off the ball at the end of the season, and they kind of determined that he, as much of a great passer he is, that they see him as more of a scorer because he didn't always look to get guys involved first, and he was emerging as a shooter, you know, with his ability as a passer, even though he had that, you know, he was prone to having some turnovers because he was trying to go for the home run play. But I think there was also some feelings that, to what your point was, of, hey, let Lonzo kind of grow into this and there's no confusion of who's running the offense. And what's interesting, I talked with a few scouts before the draft about the idea, and you know, at that point, I was hearing that, hey, the Lakers are open to playing D'Angelo off the ball with Lonzo, and he was just skeptical. He's like, regardless of what anyone's saying or how D'Angelo might be as a scorer, there'll come a point where he'll need to have the ball in his hands just to be a playmaker, and so eventually that's going to make him uncomfortable. So certainly another variable, I'm sure, that was in play.
Yeah, that all makes sense. So while we're on the topic of Lonzo, the question, so the little bit of reporting that I did and the people that I spoke to made it sound like the Lakers were all in on Lonzo almost from day one. As soon as they found out that they had the second pick overall and it looked like Fultz was going to go first, whether it was to Boston initially, and then eventually Philadelphia, that the Lakers were pretty much dead set on Lonzo Ball. And yet you had a ton of stuff coming out about, you know, well, his workout wasn't that great. They wound up having a second workout with him. They, you know, might have been interested in Josh Jackson for a little bit. De'Aaron Fox came up because of how well he played when Magic went out there and watched him play against Lonzo. from what you heard, from people surrounding the Lakers, was that a smokescreen, or were they pretty much Lonzo or bust from the get-go?
No, I don't think. I think the sentiment throughout from, you know, the NBA and the Lakers, I mean, Lonzo was the favorite, but I don't think it was a dead set they're doing this no matter what. And at the same time, stuff that came out about Lonzo's workout, that wasn't a smokescreen. I mean, it's all a matter of, there's almost, it's a weird thing, like in media, there's almost like an overreaction to the reaction. Like the thing that, the stuff that's originally reported, isn't usually a smokescreen. It's usually the overreaction that's a smokescreen, right? So
I think your initial report was just that he looked a little winded or right?
Exactly, yeah. So like I poked around and asked, like, hey, what do you think of Lonzo's workout? They're kind of like, yeah, it was okay. Like, it didn't blow us away. It wasn't great. And it was said in that kind of tone, like they take the workout for what it is. They're not going to make a big deal of it. And then I was asking, oh, well, what did he show? He's like, oh, well, you know, his shot was good. You know, we like his attitude. He looked a little winded. And, you know, and I think you obviously have to take into account that, A, these guys aren't playing a lot after college basketball season is over. Even though they're in shape, there's a difference between kind of being in game shape versus playing shape. And then there's kind of like that genuine learning curve of, even if they're doing the right things, like they're used to certain drills and they weren't used to what the Lakers were doing. But I think it just still struck them. And then since then, you know, I think the Lakers have come out and said that they had learned after the fact that he was fighting a little bit of a cough and that may have gone into it. But kind of the initial reaction from some people that watched the workout is like, yeah, like he seemed a little winded and he was huffing and puffing shortly into the workout, and you know, he'll have to show a much better one. But it wasn't like, oh my gosh, we're not gonna take him now, or what are we thinking? So that's really what it was. But I think that they were definitely intrigued with Josh Jackson and De'Aaron Fox. I think that Jackson was probably the second favorite, because of the idea of they've been awful on defense and they need a good wing defender. And I think they're really intrigued with how they would kind of play him and Ingram, you know, kind of all over the place in different positions, you know, that whole idea of trying to mimic what Golden State and all the NBA is doing with positionless basketball. And then they like De'Aaron Fox with his defense, just how engaging he is. He has a lot of good leadership qualities, but I think at the end of the day, they really love Lonzo's game. They love his passing. And even though they weren't like overly making big deal of workouts, I think the setting in the second workout really kind of gave them a different prism in viewing Lonzo, because they got to meet his family. They got to meet LeVar. They got to really kind of see what he's like, you know, behind closed doors. And, you know, the extra variable with Lonzo is obviously his dad. So I think they wanted to get a sense of to what degree is his, you know, public outlandishness just kind of a shtick and a marketing thing versus what is real. And so they want to get to know him, what he's like as a dad, as a father, and also kind of set parameters of, hey, you know, we're not going to dictate and control every single thing you do, but you know, you obviously have to like understand the boundaries, like we're gonna operate the way we need to operate and that sort of thing. So I think Lonzo was the favorite, but they were always, like with free agency, like they were always open to any certain things that they might have found in a workout, any information. You know, Magic had said that he talked with a bunch of Lonzo's teachers at Chino Hills and the principal. And in his mind, he felt like that was a very significant thing, because there wasn't a single like bad word about Lonzo, about just his character and just what he's like. It was all about, hey, he's a team guy. He's always about trying to empower others and that sort of thing.
Yeah, I would agree about the Lonzo stuff. I never thought that, you know, Lonzo's character would ever really come into question. But like, look, the controlling owner, the lead governor of the Lakers is Jeannie Buss. And with LeVar continuing to go with this stay in your lane catchphrase, like that, especially when he says it to women, that's not a very good look. What are the chances, do you think, that at some point, you know, somebody from the Lakers says, hey, you maybe get away from that catchphrase because of who your son is representing on the court?
Somebody tells him to stay in his lane?
It was right
there.
You know what's
funny with that? I saw Rob kind of subtly make LeVar stay in his lane during Summer League. So I'm partly to blame for this. And like, I didn't set out to like do this. And I think Harrison saw this. I was trying to pull LeVar to the side for like a future for down the line on something after the Summer League game. And so I was trying to do one of those like walk and talks with him.
You didn't get that one-on-one.
And I didn't get the one-on-one. Instead, LeVar decided to stop in his tracks and hold this impromptu press conference about his son's Summer League debut. And it's like, is this the precedent that we're setting? Like, LeVar is going to speak after every one of Lonzo's games. And, you know, certainly, like, there's a lot of media and everyone, you know, has different things that they need to get. So I saw at the second game the very next day that a few reporters came up to LeVar and he started saying stuff. And Rob started kind of pulling his arm around him and started talking to him and that sort of thing. So it's kind of like a subtle way of, you know, getting him away from, you know, media members like myself. But to answer the question about, I don't know if they've had the exact conversation of, hey, don't use that catchphrase, but I do get a sense that they've established boundaries of, you know, Luke's going to coach the way he needs to coach and the front office will do their thing. Like, don't interfere with that. And, you know, they kind of set that early on as well. When, you know, they had Lonzo's workout at the facility, his dad wasn't there. He wasn't trying to get in either. And he wasn't at the dinner the day before. But, you know, the season hasn't even started yet. So, like, this is all a fluid thing. We'll see to what degree the Lakers need to have more conversations with him or if it's going to just be fine the way it is. You know, I think right now we're kind of seeing like the initial pop of everything and it's hard to really read where that's going to go.
Yeah, it's just, go ahead.
So, yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to watch going through the season how much he continues to talk to various media outlets and make headlines and things like that, because that was kind of a continuous thing going into the draft. But I am curious to see how much that continues throughout the season now that, you know, the Lakers are going to be having interactions with him, presumably, and letting him know, like, what they're okay and what they're not okay with. And I'm sure that the two sides will start to kind of come to an agreement on, like, how much he needs to be going out there and saying this kind of stuff and making headlines. But I did want to flip before we wrap this up, because we somehow made it almost all the way through a Lakers podcast without talking about LeBron with you. And that's been, like, the major, it's almost a fitting kind of allegory for the season, because they're playing the season, but it really doesn't matter what they do. Their whole goal is 2018 in cap space. And we almost made it through this whole thing without addressing this. But so, Mark, I wanted to ask you just really quickly. It's kind of, August is a slow month for us. Can you just say that LeBron is coming to the Lakers so that we can aggregate that? That'd be really great for clicks.
Yeah, and which Rick, number he would Rick wear. Like, if he says...
LeBron
if he's
is going to the Lakers.
Right. Hold on, you got to say that again?
LeBron is going to the Lakers.
There we go. You heard it here first. Must credit Locked On Lakers.
Yes.
No, I... Go ahead. Well, because I was going to say, it's usually two reactions to LeBron to the Lakers rumors, right? It's either... You have Laker fans like myself wearing tinfoil hats, doing all kinds of different calculations on what the Kyrie stuff might mean, what the David Griffin stuff might mean.
It's really scary. He has like a bulletin board with strings connecting dots in his house.
Thank God this is an audio podcast and not a video one.
I'm looking at it right now, and it's not my proudest moment. But so you have that sector of the reaction, and then the other side of it is people just laugh it off. Just laugh it completely away. It's not possible. LeBron is going to be more focused on winning championships. He's not going to be able to do that. Surrounded by Lonzo Ball, who will be 20 years old, I believe, next year. Brandon Ingram, who will be also either 20 or 21 by the time LeBron shows up. So, you know, I'm a strong believer in things being somewhere in the middle, that the answer is somewhere in the middle there, that it's not right of me to go out there and build a bulletin board that connects all the dots to LeBron coming to the Lakers in a year, but it's also not right for people to just laugh it away completely. Where would you say on that spectrum the truth would maybe lie?
Yeah, I think it's basically what you said. You know, I think it's the NBA is always fluid, so so much can change in a year, but because of these specific circumstances from Cleveland's end with the Kyrie situation and management situation, and then the Lakers where, you know, they have a group of young players that seem intriguing, but they don't know to what degree they're going to be good. That makes it very unpredictable. So I think where the Lakers are concerned, they're just trying to line up all their ducks for both the best case and the worst case scenario. And that's where I think it's a little bit different than when Mitch Kupchak and Jim Buss were kind of trying to do LeBron, you know, do the whole, hey, let's go after LeBron and to another extent go after Melo. Obviously, the Lakers, if they get LeBron or Paul George, like it accelerates the rebuilding, and they are hoping that they can accelerate the development of these young guys. You know, as much as they love how Luke Walton was as a coach, like this is his first year, so I'm sure there's going to be a lot of new things that he can do and things that he learned from last year that he'll do. And now that they actually have some stable ground of, hey, they have a new front office that's on board and everyone's in synergy and that sort of thing, they're hoping if all those cylinders fire, you know, quickly, that they're in a position to strike and get LeBron. But if not, the worst case scenario at the end of the day is, hey, they showed some improvement and they have a nucleus of young guys that they'll continue to develop the next season. And where that's different from before is they had an aging Kobe Bryant. You didn't know if he was going to be healthy on the tail end of his career. And because of Kobe, you know, there's the pressure of, you know, he obviously, understandably so, wants to be in a position to win. Like, he's earned that, and that's what his fabric has always been made of. And at the same time, you had an awkward infrastructure of different coaches, and then you had guys on one-year deals. And the Lakers made those one-year deals out of the thought process of this keeps cap flexibility. If you have one-year deals with guys that, you know, are playing for their future, like, you're going to get some breakout seasons. But you had a few of those, but it was a really awkward thing because you had a lot of randomly thrown parts thrown together and the fit wasn't always there. Even if guys meant well, like, it's just natural for any working environment. If you're on an expiring deal and you multiply that by almost everyone on the roster, like, everyone's looking over their shoulder. There are going to be nights where, you know, you're kind of tempted to put on a resume instead of, you know, doing what the team needs you to do. And on top of that, not only were they in a position of where they're losing, like, why would any player go to the Lakers? But they didn't have an infrastructure to sell because all those guys that were on the team before, like, they're all expiring contracts. So they couldn't tell those guys, like, hey, this is who you're going to be playing with. Their hope was, hey, once LeBron comes on board, they can bring some other guys that follow suit, but there's not a guarantee with that. And here, LeBron's going to know who's on the team. It's going to be a bunch of young guys, and Luke Walton's going to be the coach, and he's going to know from this season, how good are they? And he's simply going to say yes or no. And if they say no, they're going to be able to develop. Now, where kind of the crossroads is going to be, it's not going to be this season. It's going to be more down the line of, like, to what degree are they going to show investment in the young guys of, you know, when Julius Randle becomes eligible for an extension. They could do that this year, but, you know, next summer if they decide to wait for that. And then, you know, when Jordan Clarkson's contract expires. So that's where it's going to become a more of a challenge of how much do you weigh the, you know, the value of developing young talent versus going after the free agents. And the D'Angelo trade aside, and I mean, believe me, that was a significant thing that they had to be willing to do. They've shown investment in the young guys, so it's not like they had to kind of make those tough decisions. And the D'Angelo thing was, it was certainly a tough decision, but as we said before, there were so many extra variables in play of the salary dump and getting good players in return and getting a draft pick and the fact they're getting Lonzo and the fact that they already had question marks about D'Angelo anyway, that it made it easier. So they're kind of in a good space right now where even if they miss out on some guys next season, you know, worst case is they'll build next year, and then that's where it's going to be kind of more interesting of, you know, where the patience level will be.
Yeah, I would completely agree that they're in a better state right now if LeBron and Paul George or whoever it might be passes up on the opportunity to come out here, because like you said, they have that core that they could continue to build around. But like you alluded to, the Lakers also have some tough, like if they want to be able to tell Paul George, hey, you can bring over any other free agent that's also on the market with you. We have room for a second max contract. And Rob Pelinka and Magic have both alluded to it quite a bit. They've both talked about it, not as if it's a possibility, but more of an inevitability. That they will have two max cap spaces for to offer to free agents next year. That would mean that, you know, either Luol Deng won't be with them next year, or Jordan Clarkson gets moved this year, or Julius Randle doesn't get extended by the end of the year. So I guess the way I read the situation is their work is nowhere near done in terms of positioning themselves for next season. Do you think? Do you think we'll see some of that during the course of this season, or do you think that's something they'll address at the end of the year?
No, I think they would certainly try to address it before the trade deadline. You know, I think I was able to talk with Jordan Clarkson last week about all this stuff, and I mean, he's kind of having the cliche of, you know, keeping the blinders on and looking straight ahead, but it seems inevitable. Like, his name it's not just going to be floated in trade rumors. Like, it's going to be actual real that the Lakers will shop him.
Yeah, I mean, it's just math. Have to.
Yeah, and I mean, they like Jordan as a player of, hey, he's part of the young, you know, he's a piece of the young core, but it's not like, hey, he's untouchable or anything. So for sure, I think they're going to be active in trade deadlines and that sort of thing to try to get to that point. Because technically, they don't have room for two max guys yet. They still have work to do. But what's challenging of that is they're still beholden to they don't want to take guys on additional years, because that kind of defeats the purpose of what they're trying to do. So all the stars are going to kind of have to align perfectly. And the other interesting component with this is, you know, when people were, when Pelinka and Magic were talking about cap space and 1 year deals, I know that was something that certainly, not in this case, but in past years, the idea of cap space, that's something that really irked Genie, because it was like, You're selling vision on an empty roster spot. There's no clarity on the development. But here, right now, that's like an additional thing versus the vision of what they have with these young guys and how they're trying to accelerate player development. It's going to be, again, interesting how much can they kind of thread the needle of staying true to those two principles without one of them kind of compromising the other.
Yeah, and then I guess, So we'll go ahead. We've taken up a lot of your time, Mark, and thank you for coming on the show today. But I guess what we wanted to wrap on was that if they do manage to free up those that second max slot and they do sign two of these huge names that are available next offseason, maybe it's LeBron and Paul George or maybe it's whoever. But what, like, are you concerned at all that Rob Pelinka is literally going to explode at the press conference? Because he, like, his stories... For some of these moves that they've made, like calling comparing Kentavious Caldwell-Pope to bread during like a famine and brought down from heaven, like what is he going to compare? If that's what he's comparing KCP to, what is he going to compare LeBron to?
I mean, just next summer will be the Sermon on the Mount sequel, right?
Like, what Rob's gonna come down to that press conference with like a Ten Commandments down from like, right, the stairwell.
He's gonna grow out a beard.
Yeah, it's funny, and Rob would be the first to admit like he can't help himself with that. Like it was funny. Which press conference was this? This is, I think, Lonzo's, where he said, you know, I really don't want to, you know, express some hyperbole. And then the next sentence, he said, you know, when I saw Lonzo, it really reminded me of just how Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady were as quarterbacks. So I think, you know, he can't help himself in doing that. But I think what's interesting and what I've been impressed with so far, I mean, there's a lot of question marks with the Lakers organization and where they move forward. I mean, they have a full season to kind of navigate. How good are these guys going to be? How does Luke build off of last year? How does the front office work next season in conjunction with, you know, with ownership and the coaching staff? All those things have been good, but like they haven't had a season of games and, you know, adversities to kind of react to, so to speak. And then, you know, as we've alluded to, there's the questions of are they in a position to get LeBron. But the thing that I walk away with so far that's kind of left me, you know, pretty impressed with what they've been doing is when the Lakers hired Magic and Rob, I think, you know, of the question marks there were of, you know, hey, they have inexperience to their field right now. And specifically with Magic, because there have been so many accomplished NBA people that didn't have front office experience that wound up not working out, you know, Isaiah Thomas, Phil Jackson, et cetera. Like, what makes Magic different? I think Magic and Rob so far have shown that they have a grinder's mentality. Like, they're putting in the work. They don't feel it's above them to have to go to college games to scout. I mean, they skipped Shaq's statue ceremony to watch the UCLA-Kentucky NCAA tournament game because they knew it was significant data to evaluate with De'Aaron Fox and Lonzo Ball. They're on the phone all the time with each other, you know, driving their wives crazy. You know, they're outlining contingency plans. So they're putting in the work. Like, I think of all the question marks that's going to go into play, I think not even in this, but really in everything, if you're willing to put in the work and really not just be a grinder, but also have a vision, that really carries a long way. So I think that's going to be kind of an intriguing part of to what degree does that play into any of the Lakers' success that they might have under this new front office.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned it. Magic Johnson is apparently going to – that was the first I've heard that he went to Lonzo's high school and was talking to teachers and principals and stuff like that, right?
Yeah. And I mean, he was saying that after his press conference. But, yeah, it kind of illustrates, like, he's not running the Lakers. Like, his role with the Lakers is not the same as it was with the Dodgers, where, you know, there's other people doing the job and he's part of an ownership group and he's more of an ambassador. Like, he's actually doing the work and he's having a vision. And, you know, I'm sure there, as with any people, there's going to be some struggles and ups and downs. But I think the least you can do is show that you don't feel that your name alone is enough. You know, you're willing to have kind of that growth and learning mindset of, you know, doing everything you can to kind of establish relationships, learn the CBA, you know, and that sort of thing. And then, you know, kind of chart the vision of what you're looking for in each player and all that. But with all that being said, as much of they've had success this offseason. It really is hard to evaluate right now because it's such a short sample size and just the circumstances of them being hired at the end of the season. Like, they don't have a full season of, you know, kind of data to really look at yet. And that's what's going to make next year pretty interesting to follow and watch.
Yeah, I think, I mean, we joked about Pelinka's hyperbole, and Magic is also no stranger to such things as well. But compared to the last front office, like, one of the major criticisms was that they weren't very good at stirring up excitement in what they were trying to do. Mitch Kupchak, I mean, everybody who's ever heard Mitch speak has a Mitch voice that they can go to. And so, like, we joke about what those guys bring to the table in terms of hyperbole, but the fans are legitimately excited, and I think it has a lot to do not just with Magic Johnson's name and the cachet that comes with it, but how excited he sounds every time he talks about the Lakers. I think there's some value there. So,
yeah, and I think in fairness to Mitch and Jim, I mean, you certainly have to take into account the, you know, the recent turn of events these years with the late owner, with Jerry Buss passing away, and the injuries, most notably to Kobe, and, you know, that transition stage. And for all the blunders they made in free agency, I mean, there's something to be said of what they did in the draft, and it's part of the reason why they're here right now with, you know, they made some good late first-round picks with Clarkson and Larry Nance Jr. and Ivica Zubac. But the thing that continually frustrated, obviously, Jeannie Buss was just the lack of clarity on what they're looking for in free agency, the strikeouts. Obviously, the relationship between she and Jim is well documented. And the fact that even with all those issues, there was never a point where there was a level of communication from either side. And that was always a frustrating thing. Because I don't think Jeannie ever wanted to be a person that's saying, hey, you need to sign this guy, you need to sign that guy. Like, she'll be the first to tell you she's not a basketball expert, but she wanted to be kept in the loop and just aware of what do you need, what's going on. And that the relationship was so divided that they really didn't have that. And here, everything's kind of synergistic with the front office and the owner and the coaching staff. And again, like, things always change in professional sports based on results. But right now they kind of they're encouraged because they have that foundation of everyone kind of being in collaboration of, this is what we're working to accomplish and this is how we'll do it.
I agree completely, and thank you again. Like Harrison said, thank you again. This was way longer than any appearance that you and I had together. So I'm going to go ahead and take that as shade that, like, when Harrison's here, you cut out a little bit more time from your schedule. But
I think the next podcast, when it's just with Harrison, is going to be what, like, 2 hours long?
Is that be a two parter?
I think we can try and keep it to 2 hours, but let's not limit ourselves.
Yeah, exactly.
But like I said, thank you very much. This is Mark Medina of the SoCal News Group. He also has the We Want Tacos podcast, which is highly informative, really good stuff there. Make sure you guys are checking all that stuff out. Thanks very much, Mark. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thanks so much.